Okay, so first of all, get yourselves nice and comfortable. And don't worry if you're cold coming from Malaysia or Singapore, because after a while your body goes numb. You can't feel it anymore, and then it's no problem for you. And anyways, I keep telling people here, where do you put things to keep them long-lasting? Where do you store things which can go off and decay very quickly? You put them in the refrigerator or the freezer. So if you come to a cold place like this, it means you don't decay so fast, which extends your life. So being in the freezer is very good for you. So don't worry about the coat. Actually, it takes too long to put the air con and get it warm, doesn't it? Okay, so we do have reverse. You don't want air con on? Reverse cycle? No, say no, yeah. Okay. No, they say no, so anyway. Just remember, what is Buddhist climate control? I told this last time in Singapore. Buddhist climate control, when it's cold, keep a warm heart. When it's hot, cool head. Yes. And that's Buddhist climate control. So you keep a warm heart and you won't feel cold. So just sitting down, first of all, get yourselves comfortable. We don't need to sit so close together. You scare the ghost. Gee. There must be something going on with these three. Okay. Very good. Okay, as long as you're happy together. Okay, so Tish, you'd like to close your eyes. What are you doing? I just know about the lights. Close your eyes. Yeah, turn the lights off, because you don't need lights now. Very good. That's much nicer. The natural light of day. So you close your eyes, and we do a sweeping meditation this morning, a very easy meditation to do, which gives you very good instant results. So with your eyes closed, just bring your attention into this present moment, first of all the stuff you've done before, the breakfast, arranging things, whatever you've been doing. Remember, that's all in the past. It's not the right thing to bring up now. If you want peace in life, you have to put down that burden of the past. And as for your future, you must always remember that now is the place your future is being made. If you really care about your future, your peace, your happiness, your health, put more attention in the present moment, the place where your future is being made. So that gets you coming into this moment and just relaxing with your body. You don't need to hold the body tight. You can just tell the body, just relax, relax, relax. The best posture for meditation is not one which is stiff and tight like some soldier. It's one which is relaxed and loose. So in this present moment, your body can relax. Now, sometimes it's hard to get in the present moment, so I'm going to do that little exercise, that mental exercise for you, to help you come into the here and now. So you can imagine yourself carrying two heavy suitcases, just like you probably do when you leave here on the way back to Singapore or London, wherever you've come from. Imagine yourself carrying two heavy suitcases, and you've been carrying them a long time. So long that your arm aches and your shoulders hurt. You've been carrying these two heavy bags. And you look down on those two suitcases. And on the outside of the suitcase of the left hand, you can see the letters PAST. It's the past. Because inside that bag are all your memories, good and bad, which represent your history, where you've come from. and you've been carrying that around in the suitcase for such a long time. Your arm aches, your shoulders hurt. You look at the other suitcase in the right hand, this imaginary suitcase, and on the outside of that, you probably guessed, are the letters FUTURE, your future. Because in that bag are all of your plans, all your fears, worries, and hopes and dreams, all there in the suitcase in your right hand. And you've been carrying that a long time too. So your right arm and shoulder hurts too. And you feel their weight. And use as much power of imagination as you possibly can, as if this was real, the two bags representing your past and your future in each hand, which you've been carrying for such a long time. No wonder you ache. Now you just focus on the suitcase in your left hand, representing your past. And you imagine yourself lowering that suitcase to the ground. Slowly, as it gets closer and closer to the floor. When it meets the ground, the weight disappears. It's no longer heavy, no longer a burden. And you move your fingers away from the handle. Move your arm upwards until it's hanging loosely by your left side, as you've let go of the suitcase containing your past, your history, good and bad. Now you focus on the suitcase in your right hand. Do it slowly, don't rush. The suitcase in your right hand represents your future. Again, the fears and worries, as well as the hopes and dreams. But how heavy that is, because you've been carrying it for far too long. Imagine lowering that to the floor as well. And when it meets the floor, as if this huge burden has been released. There's no more weight, no more heaviness. And you uncurl your fingers from the handle and move your arm up to your side so your right arm can relax, recuperate, re-energize. With your two arms relaxing, you look down at the floor. Those two bags containing all of your past and all of your future. By going through this imaginary exercise, it helps psychologically let go of the real past and the real future. You just put them down for a while so you can rest. They will be there for you afterwards. No one will take them away. This is just a temporary period which you deserve to rest. And you look down between those two suitcases, the past and the future, you realize that you're standing right between, in this wonderful place of peace and freedom between the past and the future, called the present moment, called now. Enjoy this moment. No past, no anger, no guilt, no worries about what's been done or who said what. That's all down in the suitcase. Let go, let gone. No worries about the future. That's the suitcase in the right hand. You're not going to pick it up yet. It's down on the floor. And you're just here between, in this moment, listening to my voice or the sound of the rain, just being here. And just stay a few moments in this now, and then I'll proceed to a sweeping meditation. Just notice the feeling of just being here, of having no worries for the future, no concerns about the past. It's a state of freedom. Now to continue the meditation by doing sweeping practice. I'm going to ask you to notice any feeling or sensation in your toes. Can you notice any sensation or feeling there? If you can't, wiggle those toes. Or touch them if you need to. Just to get a sensation anywhere in your toes. We call that making contact with that part of your body. And once you've made contact with your toes, see if you can relax that feeling. Just the thought of wanting to relax your toes. You should notice the sensation change slightly to move in the direction of relaxation, of ease, of comfort. Because you're mindful, aware of the feeling in the toes, you can notice those feelings change when you relax them. The mindfulness gives you feedback. And you may think that your toes are already relaxed, but you find with practice you can relax your toes much more than you ever thought possible. I will tell you the benefits of this shortly. And the way to relax the toes is just by sending them kindness, compassion, love. Just toes, may you be happy and relaxed and well. You'll find if you do that properly, the sensation in your toes changes. It does become more peaceful, more comfortable. We start with our toes just because it's an easy place to start. Now we're going to move up the body, stage by stage. Now come to your feet. Can you notice any sensation in the soles, the heels, the uppers of your feet, in the heel, wherever? Can you notice any sensation there at all? Once you are aware of a feeling or a sensation in the area of your feet, that's called making contact. Now send kindness. And you'll notice the sensations will change again. They too will start to ease, expand. Any tightness will loosen. It's like you've been soaking your feet in a warm bucket of water. The same sort of ease you may feel when you first wake up in the morning in a warm, cozy bed. With no tightness or tension anywhere to be found in your feet. By sending them kindness, relaxing, you can actually take those feet to an even deeper state of ease. You'll find that often your mind, your brain holds too many things tightly, even in places you never thought there'd be any stress. Relax the feet until they feel like tingling with this beautiful sense of comfort. So your feet are just totally relaxed. Then you move your attention up an inch or two to your ankles, which have to carry the substantial weight of your body on this narrow area of your legs. Can you notice any sensation in your ankles right now? Make contact with that part of your body. And once you have a feeling there, then you've got something to send kindness towards, something to relax. And just notice the feeling change. Notice the ankles or the feeling in the ankles. Soften and loosen, as if they are sinking into the soft cushions, with no tightness or stress on them at all. Again, the mindfulness is being aware of the sensations and seeing those sensations change. And you know whether they get more tight or whether they relax. Until you know how to relax your own ankles. And when you've relaxed them as much as you can, then you move up your body to your calves. It's a bigger area of the body with more to work on. Can you notice any aches or pains or any sensations, any feeling at all in the area below your knees and above your ankles? Once you have a feeling or sensation there, you've made contact. Now send kindness. And relax all the muscles, tendons, blood vessels, bones, skin in your lower legs. Until you can feel the legs really relaxed below the knee. Until you can get confidence that by focusing on sensations and by relaxing them, it does actually work and creates more ease and comfort and healing in that part of the body. Now you focus on your knees, which many people, when they get to my sort of age, have problems with their knees because of injuries sustained when they were young. Can you notice any feelings in the area around your knees? Make contact with those sensations and see if you can relax those sensations by sending them love. Just letting them be, loosening the tension, untying the knots, expanding the compression. Until the knees feel just so comfortable. If any of you ever do have injuries there, this method works amazingly well to help those injuries heal, by being mindful and learning how to relax those small areas of your body. And now you move up to your thighs, huge areas of muscles which do a huge amount of work, which we hardly ever focus on. Can you notice any sensations at all in your thighs? Any feelings? Any tingling, heat, tightness, whatever. That's called making contact. Now send kindness along that line of communication. And see if you can notice the sensations relax. You may have thought you were already relaxed, but sending compassion and kindness makes it relax even more. As you're focusing your awareness just on the area of your thighs, relaxing, easing, opening, softening. Until your whole legs, from top to bottom, feel more relaxed than you've probably ever known. Because you systematically relax part by part of your legs. And you can feel that sensation. I usually call it a tingling sensation. Just a sensation of comfort and ease in all of your legs. Now you go to your bottom, your buttocks sitting on the floor or the cushion or the stool. It's easy to notice that sensation. Now send that sensation some kindness. See if you can relax the muscles in your bottom. You'll be surprised, even though there's pressure from the cushion or the chair, we also add pressure, and we can relax and loosen all of that. And your mindfulness, your awareness, gives you that feedback as you notice your bottom relax. Systematically relaxing the different parts of your body. Now, like starting with the legs first of all, just to get people started, to get them accustomed to this process, because now we're going to go to the more important parts of our body. A couple of inches above your bottom is your waist. Inside of that is your bowels, the bottom of your spine. Many other organs are there. And some of those organs get sick with a cancer or an injury. Stay in that area of your waist, on the outside or the inside. Can you notice any feeling or sensation there? It should be easy by now to pick up something. And that's enough. You've made contact with the area around and inside your waist. And send this beautiful kindness, compassion, acceptance, love. And you'll find that area relaxes. Aches and pains lessen. So much illness comes from tightness and tension inside the body. Inflammations which cause muscle stress. By focusing your mindfulness on that small part of the body, picking up the start of those tensions and tightnesses, you can relax them. And you feel from a direct experience that part of your body relaxing. Those people with irritable bowels, you can notice that irritation. Be aware of it. Send it compassion and relax it to ease it off until your bowels become so relaxed that the irritation vanishes. I told many of you in Singapore and in Kerala, I believe, I think it was last October, when I had food poisoning. That's what I did. And this is amazing. In half an hour, just all the ache and pain disappeared. Focusing on the part of the body and giving it kindness till everything relaxes. Opens out. As if in your waist area, you're pulling things too tight. Loosen that tension. You're squashing things. Allow them to expand. You have to be aware and mindful, and then send this beautiful, expansive mind of compassion to your own waste, bowels, and all the little organs which live in that area, until your waist feels really, really relaxed. And then go up a couple of inches above your waist, below your chest. There you have just the intestines. You have things like livers and kidneys and spleens. The middle part of your spine. There usually can be a lot of illness or injury there. Just pick up any sensation in that area between your waist and your chest. Any sensation will do. And relax that sensation with awareness and the intention to make peace, to expand, to loosen, to relax, to let go, to release. And notice the sensation in that area of your body change. It may change ever so slightly at first, but it shows you're going in the right direction. Continue on. And soon you become very skilled at relaxing your own body part by part. Again, the trick is just kindness. Kindness is what relaxes, what comforts, what gives ease. You move up a couple more inches to your chest. And this is a very powerful for those women who face the prospect of breast cancer. When I taught this to the local melanoma foundation, they were just so excited. They knew how well this worked from their own personal experience. Can you notice any sensations in your chest? It may be your stomach. It may be just a bit high, your heart, liver, whatever else is in that area of the body around your chest area. Can you notice any sensation there at all? Any sensation? That's making contact. Now send kindness. Relax those feelings. Relax to the max. Any tightness, like something is pulling a string, you loosen both ends, so there's no tautness anymore. Anything squashed, you imagine it expanding, like a squashed sponge. Now being open and free and loose and fluffy and light. And your awareness, your mindfulness just shows you that just the thought of relaxing, of being kind, does change the feelings and makes them loose and open. As you relax all the feelings and sensations in your chest. If ever you do this yourself, linger as long as you like on one area of the body, especially if that's been injured or sick. And it really helps. You feel so much better afterwards. And then move up a couple of inches to your shoulders. Again, there's so much tension which is stored in the shoulders. First of all, notice the feelings in your shoulders. And then relax them. Just be kind. Be kind to that part of your body. You notice what I mean by being kind, because if you If you arouse that emotion and direct it to your shoulders, relaxation happens. The mindfulness can experience that. That particular feeling of looseness and freedom and ease and comfort, which you recognize as relaxed. Your shoulders loosen off. Now your whole torso has been systematically relaxed. And you can feel it just so comfortable, at ease, free, even healthy. Now we go down our arms. First of all, the upper arms, from the elbows to the shoulder. There's usually not too much problem there, but who knows? Can you pick up any sensation from your elbows to your shoulders? Once you have that sensation, see if you can relax it. Just by kindness. As if you're giving yourself a massage. Softly easing any tightness, any injury, any stress. Especially in that area called your elbows, which sometimes do get damaged through overuse. You can feel those sensations, you can expand them, loosen them, free them. I know that's called relaxation. Until your upper arms have that sensation of relaxation. And then you go to your lower arms and your wrists, noticing sensations there as well. Picking up the feelings, which are always there, but we're too busy to notice. Relaxing them, easing them, loosening them. And to your lower arms, they too tingle with the feeling of relaxation. Then you go to your hands. There are so many nerve endings in your hands, it's easy to pick up sensations there. So still with your eyes closed, you know there's feelings in your hands. Now I challenge you to relax those feelings. Just by willing them to be at ease and free. Taking away any tightness. Expanding any contraction. And notice the sensation in your hands. Become comfortable. Again, as if your hands and arms and upper body are just resting on the softest and thickest of mattresses. Just with no irritation, no tightness at all. Totally relaxed. Now you go back up the body to your neck and inside the throat, often no irritations, sometimes caused by some respiratory diseases or allergies, colds. Can you notice any sensation in your neck or your throat? Just be aware of that sensation, don't be afraid of it, be mindful of it. And then send it this beautiful kindness, just like a mother stroking her child, easing off its pain. So you, look at that irritation, with kindness, with a smile, see it ease off. The pain diminish, the itch vanish. As you relax your neck and throat, with all of your attention, focus on that part of your body, and with that contact, funneling relaxation, kindness, compassion to a neglected part of your body, part you probably never even think about until it gets very sick. You think about it now and relax it. Now you move up to your face, the front of your head, because there's always a lot of tension around your eyes and your mouth especially. Can you notice the feelings around your eyes and mouth, the sensations in those muscles? You've made contact. You're mindful. Now relax those muscles. Just with a sense of kindness. Realizing freedom. And freeing everything. Just letting your face be. Not trying to smile or frown. Just relaxing to the max. And notice the sensations in the front of your head change. It's very important to be able to relax your face. Because sometimes that reflects the way you are holding the rest of your body too tight. Till your face tingles. It too is relaxed. And last of all, go 2 inches behind your eyes, where your brain is located. They say that you can't have any sensations in your brain, but you can imagine them. Can you imagine any feelings in the area of your body called your brain? You've made contact. Now be kind. Relax your own brain. Take away any tightness. Stress comes from people pulling at either end. Let go of those ends so nothing is pulling or pushing anything. As you deliberately relax your own brain, freeing it. Not squashing, but expanding, softening, loosening, until you experience in that area of your body called your brain, relaxation. Now you've relaxed your whole body from toe to head, head to toe. What does it feel like? Totally relaxed. I'm now going to be quiet for 3 minutes, at the end of which we'll finish the meditation. getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? What's it like inside? Hopefully those two bags are still by your side. You haven't picked them up yet. Fortunately, now you have to pick them up. Now just prepare yourself to come out from your meditation. See if you can count three breaths, in, out, in, out, in, out. And at the end of the third out breath, open your eyes. Here we go. It's a nice little sweeping meditation for you. That was a sweeping meditation, not a sleeping meditation. I remember that sometimes if any of you have any trouble with insomnia, is that too? Come here. If any of you have any trouble with insomnia, that's a very good technique for dealing with it. It's actually next weekend I'm going to Sydney for this Buddhist psychology conference. That was there about two or three years ago, three years ago. The first time I went there, that there was a lady, a psychologist in Sydney, who said that she uses that type of meditation in her business. And she's got this e-business titled sleeplikeababy.com. And that's exactly the technique which she uses online for people around the world with insomnia. And she's made a fortune. It works all the time. Stops people having actually to take all these pills. Because all you need to do, one of the reasons why people can't sleep well at night, is just the tension of their day is stored in their body. And the body is just too tired. It can't relax and go to sleep. And just by starting from your toes and relaxing as you go up, you're relaxing your body, and usually before you get to your thighs, you're fast asleep. It's much better than sort of the old trick of counting sheep, because too many of you are accountants these days, and so you just count too fast. 2, 4, 6, 10, 20. But just watching the feelings in the body and relaxing them sends you into a beautiful, calm sleep. And also, it's really great for if you have illnesses. Just mentioned during the discussion there, or just doing what I was doing, that it was last October during the retreat period. Because you know how I eat. People put food in your bowl. I don't know what goes in there sometimes. And sometimes it's stuff that shouldn't go in there. And you put it in your tummy. And it was just about, well, not maybe half the monastery. Many, many monks, and maybe we all had food poisoning. And so, you know, it's a one day, I think, last year, I went without eating. Because, you know, usually, because my stomach doesn't belong to me, so I let other people put what they like into it. But that day, no way, I felt just too sick. So I was in my hut, just rolling around. Because you can't get comfortable. And it was only then I realized, what would I do, teach others? You know, we all suffer from hypocrisy. And sometimes, instead of, you know, doing what I would tell others to do, you know, I was just trying other little ways. I thought, I would tell others to do this method. And so I did that method, and it worked straight away. It's really impressive when you find out it actually works. So, of course, I do that a few times, not just that time. But, you know, sometimes you forget. So it really works. There's one of the other monks, I was like talking about him over in monastery over the road. And he had this chronic back problem. And he went to the doctors, had an MRI scan, and found out if there was anything wrong. And there was something wrong. He had a genetic defect in his spine. And the doctor said, look, there's nothing you can do. You can't operate. Nothing you can do. Just don't sit too long in one position. And I'm a monk. I need to meditate. He said, you can't. It's bad for you. So there was this case of this monk, you know, who's a dedicated meditator who wanted to live like that. And the doctor said it was bad for your health. And there's nothing you can do about it. So instead he used this type of meditation. Because what he did, he noticed that there were some muscles on either side of his spine. Now, you've got those muscles as well. I've got those muscles, but you've had no awareness of them because you don't need to. So he started by, with his hand, just stroking those muscles on either side of his spine just to get some awareness. And any neurologist knows that once you touch something with mindfulness, you're actually making connections in your brain. You know, your neurons are connecting. You're connecting those synapses. The brain does actually change. And by keeping on touching and massaging those muscles, it was only a matter of weeks when he could feel those muscles without needing to touch them. He then made those connections there. And once he had that connection between his brain and those muscles, he could consciously, he learned after many other weeks, learning how to expand and contract those muscles, just to move them, you know, at will. And once he could move them at will, he started exercising them. And now they're so strong, those muscles, that they totally compensate for the weakness in his back. So it's no problem anymore. He can meditate. It's a very brilliant way of overcoming a problem through this mindfulness and kindness, which would have stopped him being a monk. So it's really lovely to see that. So it does actually work. And of course, for people with cancers who are really in trouble, you know, you tell them, this is what to do. Put your mindfulness in that area, and just send it kindness, and expand, loosen, comfort, and of course healing does happen. If you're tense and afraid, of course you just make things much, much worse. So that's why it's a really beautiful way of meditating, and also it does give you a sense of relaxation. You're in the present moment, just being with the feelings in the body, and you're not thinking about the stock market, about your family, about what you're going to do next. You know, you've got a peaceful abiding for half an hour, and that much is very helpful for you. It just gives you a sense of the mind resting. And once it's rested afterwards, you can do whatever you want. You feel energized. So actually that's why we did that little meditation. So, any questions about that? Or comments? You know, it's really easy to do when someone does all the work for you, like me. Tell you what to do here, tell you what to do. But, as you all know, all these things are always recorded. I'm sure Danny has got this being recorded. She records everything I did. Someone was just talking about this conference. Can they video me at the conference next week in Sydney? I said, sure you can. You can video everything except for the time I'm in the toilet. Please don't video. Other than that, fine. Was it being recorded, Danny? Of course, there you go. My assumption was correct. So if you like that sort of instruction, just get a copy and you can play it to yourself until you get the message and do it by yourself. But the problem with listening to a recording is that I go at a particular speed. And sometimes you get to some part of your body, you really want to do some more work there, so you should linger on it. Other places you can go quite quickly through. And if you have got an illness, sickness, a pain, like, linger there. And just give it as much kindness, compassion as you possibly can. You know, one of the places I learned that from, my brother's in the back. Remember Tony, whenever we used to go playing soccer over the park, over the road? What was it? Springfield Gardens, I remember that. Springfield Park, yeah. Or over on the street, round the back somewhere, or in the playground at school. And, you know, we were boys, and boys being boys, you know, you'd fall over a lot, go for a tackle. And you kept on scraping the skin off your knees. So we'd go to our mother. What would mother do? Kiss it better. Remember that? Now, at that time, I didn't know anything about biology. Now you know you've got a mouth with all the germs going on an open wound. But did it ever get infected? Never did. And straight away, I mean, the pain disappeared. Just because someone was giving an act of kindness and love. And the pain disappeared. Not only the pain disappeared, it healed up. And 2 minutes later, you were back there playing soccer with your friends. That's brilliant. And that's actually how a bit of kindness, real kindness and mindfulness, actually has a great therapeutic effect. So you can heal your own body, at least help heal a lot of your bodily pains and sicknesses that way. And of course, the ones inside are the worst ones. They're the ones which no one else can see. The headaches, the migraines, so the anginas, the tummy aches, you know, the liver problems, whatever else is inside. You can feel those sensations inside of you. focus on them and spread them heaps and heaps and heaps of kindness. Kiss them better, metaphorically. And straight away, a lot of the pain disappears. Relaxation happens and possibilities of healing occur. It's a brilliant way. Yes. Ah, that one, yes. Now, you've probably heard me, those of you who've been on my meditation retreats. So when you have got heat in part of your body, that's another very good sign. It happens very often. That is a sign, again, of healing happening. The usual tale I tell is when, over years and years ago, when we used to have our retreats in North Perth, at the interview time, this lady came along and she said, I was meditating, I got very peaceful, but suddenly my shoulders and my neck got so hot. It was like it was a fever, but not a normal fever, because normal fevers are all over your body. It's just centered in her neck and her shoulders. So I said, what's going on? And that's when I told her, I said, when did you have your whiplash injury? And she raised her hand, you read my mind. I always knew you could read my mind, Ajahn Brahm. How did you know? I never told you I had a car crash. And I disappointed. I said, look, I just, and it's reason, it's logic, it's not psychic powers. I've been in this business a long time. You know, you've got, you know, this is healing. You had some sort of injury in your neck and shoulders. What's the most common injury these days in your neck and shoulders? It's no car accidents, whiplash. I said, what's been happening there? I told her, look, you've had that whiplash. That part of your body has been so tense because of the bruising and the injury. And now because of meditation, you've managed to relax for the first time probably since that injury. And now the natural energies of the body, you know, what in China we call the qi, what in Indian medicine they call like the winds, the vata, which goes through your body. So that now has a chance to reach those areas. And all the energy is just focusing in that area and it's doing its job of healing you. And of course I ask the question, how do you feel? He said, I feel so good. In that area of the body. And it's very common. You've had all sorts of hot spots which people have had in their body during meditation. And they come afterwards and say, what was that? And I said, you know, you've probably just healed the cancer in your breast. And they said, I'm not underestimating this. You had a hot spot there. The body knows there's a problem somewhere. You just got to get out of the way and let the body do its job. Or, you know, some other part of your body. And because it's got very hot, you know, it means energy's gone there, healing's happening there, and you've done a huge amount to keep yourself healthy. So hot spots are really good. But if you're hot all over the body, it's really, really hot. It's probably because the meditation hall's on fire, and you better get out quick. Yeah, go on. Yes. Ah, yeah. Okay, that's... Because now the Vulture's Peak, now that's one of my favourite places. That's one of the places where the Buddha stayed over in India. And, you know, for those who've never been there, it's totally uncommercialised. You know, it's just, that's why it's so natural. It's actually too natural. There's dog shit in all the caves around. You've seen that. And people throw rubbish all around. But... It's not commercialized at all, and so it's lovely that you can sit in those places and you know that there's no doubt at all that that's where the Buddha would have meditated in that area. So when you were meditating on a spot the Buddha would have meditated on. 100% certainty. And that's really sort of, you know, really amazing. That really gives you goosebumps. So Kuala is a very powerful place, and very... wonderful little area, there will be many sort of heavenly beings around, devas. That's the sort of place they would congregate. So it's quite likely that that feeling of warmth and energy, but also the goodness around it, would have been like a deva. Some places have got huge energies. That's why, you know, I've told many people, there's a couple of places where I can't help myself, but I just cry. That's one place. Just got these incredible emotions of joy and happiness. That's one place where I get that. You know what it's like being a guy? You do it once and you think, okay, I'm not going to do that again. I know what's going to happen, but you just can't help yourself. There's some sort of resonance there between that place. Other people get those emotions in other parts of the places in India. But I get it there. And there's one lady, she was here on Saturday. Well, yeah, I don't mind you saying, but you know, sort of, it was Barbara. You know, you gave the some donations to her the other day. Angie, you gave her some donations to Barbara. You know, she's an English lady. I think from somewhere, Cornwall. She's Devon, I think, yeah. And the first time she went on pilgrimage to India with me, you know, I gave her a little orientation course, first of all, just, you know, telling people what to expect and how to prepare. And when I gave my little introductory speech, I told her there are some places, you know, you'll go to which are just so emotionally charged. You know, you'll feel incredible sort of happiness and joy and maybe even burst out into tears. And she told me afterwards, when I said that, she thought, that's just a monk being crazy. You know, it's only ruins. And, you know, she came from a place, you know, like England, where there's all ruins all over the place. You know, I lived in an old ruin for many years. The rooms in Cambridge where I live were built in 1600 and something. And 2 years I spent in those places. And so you've seen old places before and just historical monuments. So big deal. But then afterwards, the first day she came to ask forgiveness and say sorry. Because the first place she went into was the Mahabodhi temple in Bodh Gaya. And totally unexpected, as soon as she walked in there, she burst out crying and couldn't stop. She wept. It was uncontrollable. And she was embarrassed like hell about weeping in public like that. But more so because, and I was right and she was wrong. So she came to say sorry afterwards. She said, I don't know what happened. She just started crying uncontrollably. So there are some energies in these places. So you can pick up on them sometimes. Yeah, Angie. And hypnotherapy. Okay. My theory on hypnotherapy, being a meditator. And of course I did sort of... one of my societies I joined as a student was the Psychic Research Society. There's three societies I joined. One was the Astronomical Society, the other one was the Buddhist Society, and the other one was the Psychic Research Society. And still I've got some really good friends over in that Psychic Research Society. One of my best friends. Tony, remember when you went to lunch with one of my friends? He was the president there of the Psychic Research Society there. And one of the girls there who came, she apologized her husband couldn't come because he was really sick, and that was Tony Cornell. And Tony Cornell was actually the big boss of the Psychic Research Society. And for many years, about 20, 30 years, he was the head ghost hunter in Great Britain. And I remember some reading newspapers here. And if there's any ghosts happening over in UK, he'd be the guy to write the article, you know, for the Observer or the Sunday Times or whatever. He was the expert, Dr. Tony Cornell. And so he was a great guy. It's really a shame that he's sick. I may have died now in the last couple of years. I haven't heard. Because he would be a great person to invite to the BGF. He'd raise heaps and heaps of funds to get the head ghost hunter of Great Britain, telling all the old stories. You know, forget about the Dhamma or meditation. You get more people coming to hear about ghost stories. No, real ones. You charge. You don't need to charge people to go in, but charge people to go out afterwards. They won't want to leave. But anyway, we also had those hypnotherapists would come every year actually to show what they were doing. So you learn a lot about what hypnosis was. But what it, I always understand it as, is that bypassing your brain to get to the mind is far more powerful than the brain. A good example of that is somebody showed me this documentary, which was done by the BBC. Any weird stuff, they usually send documentaries about weird stuff. And this documentary, it showed there was a guy in London, somewhere, North London, and he totally lost his memory. And no one knew why. You know, it was just one moment in time, and he couldn't remember anything before that. He'd only recently got remarried. He's in his, like, 40s or 50s. And he'd recently got remarried for the second time, and he couldn't remember, no longer his first wife, even his new wife. He couldn't remember her, didn't know her name, didn't know anything. So his memory was totally erased, you know, from one moment in time, anything previous. And they obviously did all sorts of scans on his brain, could find nothing wrong at all. And then it was a hypnotist who actually hypnotized him and brought him back, you know, to before that time when he had perfect memory. What had happened, he'd be working in a little shed in his garden, and the telephone had rang in the house. This was before he had mobile phones, you know, a landline had rung. He'd rushed out to answer the phone, and he hit his head on one of the shutters of the workshop, which happened to be open. And that must have been quite a big blow in just the right part of the brain, and that totally wiped out his memory. And under hypnosis, you could remember everything. And so they gave him the hypnotic suggestion, after you come out, you remember everything. And he came out, couldn't remember a thing. And, you know, it's obviously he really wanted to. You know, he had a life and it's causing him an immense amount of stress, you know, not being able to remember. So it wasn't sort of done, you know, he wasn't trying to be a con artist and to lie. He really could not remember, except under hypnosis. So his brain was damaged. It was out of his brain, but it was still in his mind. And that's what the hypnotists do. They can actually access that mind. See, the mind is pretty lazy. It would usually use the brain, but it doesn't have to use the brain. It can actually bypass it. It's the same phenomena when people die. Very often, more often than people understand, that the last minutes of death, they come out of the coma. They come out of the unconsciousness, and they can maybe say a few words, squeeze someone's hand, or just, even though... There's that great story, it's a number, Chittapala showed it to me. We may have it in a monastery somewhere, maybe I'll ask him if I see him. It was in the Time magazine about a doctor, a whole issue about some of the wonderful things of the mind. A doctor in the United States who was treating a guy with a brain tumor. As a brain tumor was progressively growing in his brain, it meant that his cognitive function was decreasing, you know, day by day in proportion to the growth of the tumor. And it was a slowly developing tumor, so it could take a couple of months before he would die. And the events up to his death were very clearly known by the doctor. You know, you'd lose your ability to control your bodily functions, your speech, you'd lose your memory, you'd go into a coma, as the last part of the brain will be used just to keep your heart going, you know, the last part of your important bodily functions. And then eventually there won't be enough brain left to keep the heart going, you die. So it's very well known what would happen. And so the doctor could see the progress of the tumor by the effect it was having on his cognitive functions. When it came close to the end, he called the family around the last few hours of life. And because, you know, there's hardly any brain left, he was in a total coma. And the only thing left going was his heart pumping. And then just the last few moments of his life, actually longer than a few moments, he opened his eyes, he bent up, had a conversation for 15 minutes with his loved ones, and then died. And the doctor was astounded, it was true, saw it happening. The amazing thing was that at that time, the man had no brain left. It was total tumor inside his cranial cavity. But there he was, up, speaking, you know, cogently. Basically, the mind being released from the brain and the mind being able to speak. So that's actually what we access in hypnotherapy. And of course, that mind has a repository of huge amounts of memories, including ones from your early life and life before. I don't mind telling again this story because Tony might understand this one. See how good your memory is. But there's a rule which I have as a monk. I can't tell about anything, you know, past this life. I can't tell about previous lives or anything sort of psychic or magical or whatever. But, you know, there are these little loopholes which I exploit. And I still keep within the rules, but I mean, because it's sometimes so frustrating being a monk, you know, things you can't tell people. But that I'm within my rules here. I've mentioned the story before many times about getting into very nice deep meditation and asking myself the question, what's my earliest memory? And Tony, what came up was when I was a baby. You know, just like in that picture in the book about that time. And what actually happened, because I never forget this, well, of course I won't forget it. As soon as I did that, I had a smell come in my nose. That was the first experience. Not a vision, not sound, but smell. And that was the smell of my baby's pram, which I recognized straight away. And as soon as I recognized, I mean, my eyes were closed, I was in meditation. As soon as I recognized that was the smell of my baby's pram, I was back in the pram again. You're back in there enough to be able to move around, to see its colours. It's just a simple black and white pram. No real colours there. And to see, this is why I think, maybe you remember my favourite toy, Porky. You remember that? Yeah, did, okay. See, corroboration. This little blue pig. He's laughing. This little blue pig. And in it must have had some beans or something, and it would, like, rattle. And our mother would walk it. It only had two legs, walk it backwards and forwards. And I love that little pig. That's my favourite toy. And there you go. You get all these amazing memories. And they're just, you know, and there's no way that your brain can remember that. That comes from sort of the mind. So, you know, everything else. But the other thing interesting, Tony, that experience was it was the smell which was most important. And it was only, you know, because I'd tell these stories to people, and there's quite a few doctors in here. And there was one, I think, gynecologist who said, that was really interesting because, as far as they know, in the first weeks of development of a kid, you know, their eyes aren't developed yet, or the way the eyes are connected to the brain, they just do not process visual information that well, nor sounds. In those first days of life, you recognize your surroundings by smell. That's how you recognize your mother, you know, your pram, everything by smell. And, you know, I know exactly how that works because you can go back there and understand it. So, you know, because I've got a sense of humor, I always tell people, if ever a mother gives birth to a baby, do not change your perfume. You'll confuse the hell out of your kid. Who's this? Because your kid recognizes you by what you smell like. So that's how hypnotherapy works. You can actually get back to the mind. And there's huge amounts of stored memories in there. But you've got to be careful because I've seen some sort of hypnotherapists. Some are really, really good. And some, you know, they put ideas into your mind. Somebody showed me a video of that fellow Brian Weiss, I think his name was, because he went on Oprah Winfrey's show. And somebody got a video of Brian Weiss on Oprah's show, where he was supposed to be using hypnotic regression to get all these people back into their previous lives. But that wasn't very convincing, because he was actually putting information into people. He was actually leading them on. And, you know, you're sort of back in an olden times, isn't it? So whatever it was, anyway, but he was giving sort of, like in if any legal practitioners here, giving leading questions and getting the answers he wanted rather than having these people spontaneously give information. So that was pretty suspicious. So you've got to be careful. If you go to a hypnotherapist, get one who doesn't give you leading questions. So you know, you find out your past yourself. If you're, any of you interested, the Dennis, you know, our president here, are you still going to go? Have you had dinner with Dennis? Haven't you already, Tony? Okay, because he's a hypnotherapist. He does that. He's part time. Did he hypnotize you? Ah. You can probably get some more stories about me out of you, things which you've repressed. Well, one thing about hypnotherapy, especially when it's used just for, you know, solving some emotional problems or behavioral problems, whether it gets you into a past life or not is not the point. It actually works. It's got a huge success rate. You know, so someone's got some sort of phobia, or you know, they can't sort of manage to keep a relationship, or they're always sort of, you know, lack of self-esteem or something, and they go to these hypnotherapists or who do regression, and you know, they're supposed to get into some past life. Whether it's true or not doesn't matter, because they usually heal the problem. And you've heard many of the stories before, but. Yeah, that story of which Dennis told me, he went to a conference in Sydney with his mates, and the most amazing story came there of this girl who had anorexia. And you've heard that story before, but I'll tell it again for my brother's sake if no one else is. But you know, that sometimes I looked up anorexia once in the dictionary, and you know what? This, you know, one of the main symptoms of anorexia is you look in the mirror and you think you're overweight. So I reckon I've got anorexia. Because I've got that symptom. Anyway, being serious, you know, this lady really did have anorexia. And, you know, no one could help her. So, you know, psychologists, they try their best. But this, you know, she was desperate, or rather her mother was desperate, because this girl was dying. So they took her as a last resort, you know, to one of these hypnotherapists. Who knows? Cost a few dollars, but you know, it's not that expensive. And you know, she happened to be easy to hypnotize and take back into a previous life. And that's where in her previous life, what she said was that in her previous life, she was the younger of two sisters. And both of those sisters fell in love with the same guy. You know, really sort of full-on love with the same man. And her elder sister was more attractive. And she was, what she said, was plain. And boys being boys, you know, they chose the more attractive one and married the elder sister. And the younger sister was so heartbroken that she killed herself, committed suicide. You know, that was, life was not worth living. You know, she'd lost the love of her life to her elder sister. She couldn't walk away because that would be her brother-in-law. And she just couldn't stand it. So she took her own life. And she'd been reborn as this young girl. And she was so desperate to be pretty and attractive because of how the lack of beauty had just made her kill herself in a previous life. You know, her desire and obsession with beauty was so over the top. You can understand why, that she was anorexic. Now, the interesting part of that story was the mother was with her while she was about a 16-year-old girl. Her mother was with her during the session. And it was a mother who was hysterical, couldn't stop crying. And so when they took the daughter out of hypnosis, then the therapist had to deal with the mother. What's wrong? And that's when the mother said, I was that sister. I never told my daughter this. It's been one of these secrets of the family we don't like telling anybody. When I was young, I had a younger sister. We both fell in love with the same boy. I married him. My younger sister committed suicide. The details which she said, that was my sister, who is now my daughter. her attraction for that man was so strong. If he couldn't be his wife, she would be his daughter. So she was reborn again in the same family, but as the daughter. And that's why she was anorexic. Very complex problem. It was very fascinating that it came up in Sydney, these Caucasians. So that's what hypnotherapy can sometimes do.